I wrote a book about the small town of Home, Washington. It was an anarchist colony about 100 years ago, and it's not far from here, just a 40-minute drive over on the Key Peninsula. I was out there this summer doing a reading, and during the Q&A session afterwards, somebody asked me which character I most identified with in the book. Donald Vos, I answered, and I immediately regretted what I had said. Why did I say that? Donald Vos was the guy who grew up in Home and became a spy for a detective agency. Here I am among the descendants of this colony and the people who live in this small town now, and I'm saying that I identify with the traitor. The one who sold out his friends and family. Writers and spies do have some things in common. Joan Didion put it this way, writers are always selling somebody out. Both seek a story, but what they do with that story is a little bit different. Donald Vos wanted to help piece together the story of a crime and cash in on a reward. I was just fascinated by the spectacle of this black sheep among the anarchists. And it was an amazing story. No one's quite sure how Donald Vos became a spy. There'd been an anarchist bombing in Los Angeles. 20 people had died, and two of the suspects were still at large. I suspect that he was tempted by the huge reward. And by all accounts, he was pretty lazy, spent most of his time drinking. Once he got involved in the investigation, he then used his mom's connections within the anarchist community to track down those two suspects. He found the first out on Bainbridge Island and the second in New York City. During the trial, everyone in Home found out about his treachery. And they hated him. Yet, when it was all over, he went back to Home for some reason and stayed with his mom from time to time. He'd mostly stick to the back paths and people would ignore him. But there was this one time that this guy walked up to him at a baseball game and spat right in his face. He eventually joined the Merchant Marines, an occupation in which no one would recognize his name. As I was writing this, I had no idea that it would become a book or part of my book. I actually didn't even know if it was any good. Against all my doubts, I hurled the one thing that I knew I could control, my own hard work. During this time, I had a full-time job. I was in graduate school, getting an MFA in creative writing. And about a year into the book, my son was born. I typically write in the morning, and it seemed like the time I was getting up was becoming earlier and earlier. First, it was 4:50 in the morning, then it was 4:20 in the morning, then it was 3:50 in the morning. It didn't matter whether I'd been up helping out with the baby or we were all sick. I was there at the writing desk almost without fail. All that effort really began to pay off in good and bad ways when I got to this Donald Vos chapter. The writing itself began to flow. It was like the story was beginning to tell itself. And at the same time, the red splotches appeared on my skin. Looking back, I can see that the symptoms were there long before it got bad. My fingers occasionally would start to look like dried baby carrots. You know how they look, when the dried baby carrots get dried out in the fridge? That's what my fingers looked like. And I just thought it was having to wipe all the desitin, the diaper cream, off my fingers from, changing diapers. Then my whole family got sick. First the baby, then my wife, and then me. And with this horrible stomach bug, I didn't eat for about a week. And then 2 weeks later, these splotches appeared on my skin. They climbed up my arms and my legs, my chest and my back. I thought I had some horrible infection. So then I finally ended up in the dermatologist's office. She quickly diagnosed psoriasis. Psoriasis? What the hell is that? Is it like some kind of liver disease? No, wait, that's cirrhosis. Another disease that sometimes afflicts writers, maybe. She explained to me that psoriasis is an autoimmune disorder that causes the skin cells to replace themselves faster than normal. She said I had guttate psoriasis. Guttate means raindrop, she explained. As if she knew I was a writer and might enjoy the specificity of those words. I admit that I did. It made me feel like the winter rains had left their imprint on my skin. When she left the office, I pulled one of the pamphlets off the wall. It told me that psoriasis was caused by things like stress and lack of sleep. Just how much strain I was under became apparent when the nurse came in to tell me about the treatment. She said that I had to treat every lesion on my body twice a day. Now, mind you, these lesions covered my entire body. Twice a day, I had to treat them with clobetasol, steroid ointment, Dovenox cream, and CeraVe cream. Three different things. And then I also had to soak my hands and feet in a solution of Balnitar, stuff I later learned smelled exactly like flea dip. As she spoke, I became more enraged. I've got a full-time job. I'm in graduate school. I've got a kid at home, I told her. What of this is essential? I mean, I thought maybe she was like, you know, maybe they could cut out some little part and give me the sort of the short version. She looked at me and said, I'll go talk to the doctor. She disappeared for a few moments and came back and told me, in essence, it's all essential. The thing I learned about psoriasis is that it's not like an illness caused by infection. The body's whole system is out of whack, and it can take a long time for the skin to respond to treatment, and sometimes it never does. Mine got worse, especially my hands and feet. They became inflamed and covered with this thick white skin that the doctors call plaque. What a horrible word. But, I mean, that's what they call it. My wife said that my hands looked diseased. My feet often were so cracked that it felt like my shoes were lined with glass. And yet, in all this, there was a certain literary association that came to mind as I was thinking about psoriasis. John Updike had it, and I recently learned that Vladimir Nabokov had it, and you talked about Tom Waits. He had it, one of my favorite singer-songwriters. Yet if I'd known that becoming an author at this time in my life would also lead to me getting psoriasis, I'm not sure if I would have chosen it. Yet I also am not sure whether I had a choice. When I was a teenager, I would go to the literature section of the bookstore and find the place where my books would be. It pleased me that I would be near Kurt Vonnegut. And I imagined the shelf filling up with as many titles as his. Yet I had no idea how you go from scribbling in a notebook to publishing a book. And I certainly didn't imagine that Balnitar would be a part of it. I followed doctor's orders. I soaked my hands and feet in that stuff that smells like flea dip. As I did, I often would just listen to podcasts. But sometimes when I pulled my hands out of the Balnitar and I'd see this thick white skin, I would reflect on the transformation of butterflies. We tend to think about transformation in a cliche way of that very hungry caterpillar happily going about his life and suddenly becoming a beautiful butterfly. But what if each stage along the way hurts? What does it feel like to press against the inside of a chrysalis? This whole time, I was also writing about Donald Voss, and maybe because of the pain that I was in, I no longer felt like I was just writing his story. It felt like I was channeling whatever it is that happened to him. And his story ends with this sad commentary on the nature of literary immortality. While he was in New York, Donald Voss befriended this man named Terry Carlin. When he was in New York, Donald Voss befriended this man named Terry Carlin. Terry Carlin, after Donald Voss was outed as a spy, then befriended another aimless young lush named Eugene O'Neill. The two of them, O'Neill and Carlin, would rehash this whole Voss episode over and over again. Many years later, when Eugene O'Neill became a famous playwright, these experiences would germinate into one of his most famous plays, The Iceman Cometh. In it, there's this character named Donald Parrott, whose story is almost exactly the same as Donald Voss's. And the strange thing is, they died in the same way, or very similar ways. And as far as I know, there's no direct connection between them. Donald Voss was carrying a case of beer up a ladder on a ship when he lost his footing and plummeted. He never knew that his literary double was just appearing in New York City with the name Donald Parrott. And at the end of the play, I'm not ruining it, he throws himself off the roof of Harry Hope's saloon. This whole notion of literary immortality seems pretty obsolete to me, especially with things out there like the possibility of nuclear annihilation and global warming and what have you. But the urge to make something of worth that lasts beyond our own limited lives seems so human. Now that there is a book out there with my name on it, I don't ask myself, can I do it? Instead, I'm asking myself, how am I going to do it? And what kinds of stories do I want to take on and then share with the world? As I consider these questions, I look to writers like Gary Snyder. I have a quote from him taped to my computer right now that says, "There's no rush about calling things sacred." That, for me, is what this whole project of being a writer is all about, calling things sacred. But it must be rooted in those first three words. There's no rush. There's no rush. In that case, it's okay to sleep in every once in a while. Thank you.